Hello and welcome to Power Pros Podcast, episode 140. I'm your host, The Hoff, Chris Hoffman, and with me is my co-host and nemesis, Pete Michaud.
Howdy again, Chris.
We are back, of course, once again to talk about what's going on in the world of Nintendo. We are still kind of recovering from E3 last week, so a lot of this week's discussion is going to be hands-on impressions from the show floor, but we've also got some other news to discuss and some new games to talk about, so we should probably not waste any time and get right to it.
Woohoo!
And let us kick things off with a discussion of the biggest Nintendo announcement of the show, that of course being Super Smash Bros. Ultimate for Switch.
Yeah, that was a doozy, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I would love to be able to come on here and provide all kinds of great insights and intricate details about the nuances of the game and how things have changed. But, you know, after seeing the Smash Brothers tournament and hearing the pros talk about all these little minutiae things in gameplay and how that affects all the characters, I feel like I have pretty much nothing to add.
Come on, Chris.
Except that the game is lots and lots and lots of fun. It is very, very fun. It was a joy to be able to play it. I played maybe 8 matches or so, was able to try out a bunch of different characters, experience a bunch of different backgrounds, and while I can't get into the intricacies of the gameplay and how things have changed, I know it is super fun and really looking forward to the final game coming out when it hits this December.
Cool. Overall, just playing it, did it look the same, or could you tell that it was like, you know, high res on the Switch?
Well, even on Wii U, it was HD graphics, and so this one looks pretty similar to that. Okay. I couldn't really tell that much of a big visual difference. Of course, right away, I went into trying out the new characters, so that was one thing that I could obviously tell was new and different, so that's what I went for right off the bat. In fact, my very first match was me playing Ridley going up against the Inkling, who was my opponent, and it's kind of funny because the characters seem almost like they're built to be opposites of one another. Because, you know, one of Ridley's moves, and one of his coolest moves, I think, is his side special, which is like this charge, and then he grabs the guy and then drags him along the floor. However, the Inkling's main special is shooting with their gun, you know, splatting their opponent, and that sort of stops running characters right in their tracks. So, you know, the first thing I try to do is dash towards them and grab them. They just stand there and they fire, and it really slows me down. And so it was a really good counter to that move.
Yeah, no kidding.
However, I was able to pull off the victory in that match. I was able to get lucky quite a few times with his down special, which is that swiping claw, which just really takes out a whole big chunk of health and knocks the opponent over if you hit that sweet spot, which I was able to do a few times. And then when they go down, you just follow up with a smash attack, and I found that to be very effective for taking out my opponent in that initial match.
Listen to you, a Smash Bro pro.
Not even close. I played my first match on the Great Plateau Tower, and that was a lot of fun. Then after that, I decided I would try out the Inkling for myself, and I think I lost that match. I was playing a three-way match on the Mega Man stage, and while I was in love with seeing all the Mega Man stuff and having the Cyclops monster beat the crap out of me and my opponents, I was not able to pull off the victory. It is really tough because you would run out of ink, and since I am not a big Splatoon player at all, you know, either the original Splatoon on Wii U or Splatoon 2 on Switch, you know, you really have to get used to recharging your ink. And of course, if you're playing the real game, you know, that happens naturally. But, you know, doing it in Smash Brothers, when I'm not really used to having to do that, it's like, oh, I have to learn how to do this mechanic. Otherwise, my attacks aren't going to be very effective.
Right. Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. But still, it was a lot of fun playing as that character. And they have lots of cool moves.
Cool. Did you see a lot of item usage? Anything new stand out?
Yeah, I did get exploded by the fake Final Smash Ball a few times. It was not obvious to me which ones were real, which ones were fake. And, you know, pretty much no matter which kind appeared, everyone would start going after it. And, yeah, plenty of times that would just blow up and send us all flying off the screen. That was certainly the one I noticed the most.
So you made a lot of friends.
Sure. Yeah, I did manage to actually pull off a victory after that with the Inkling, so I kind of got some revenge there. And then I decided to check out our old friend Solid Snake. And I did that on the Moray Tower stage, which I really like that stage, the way it's multi-tiered and has all these different levels on it. That one seems really cool.
Right. It almost looks like Donkey Kong or something.
Yeah, it does a lot, actually. I'm terrible with Snake. I don't understand how I can be so terrible with Snake. He has this guided missile as one of his specials. And for some reason, whenever I use that, and I wasn't really trying to use it, I didn't really play Snake that much. I don't know his moves, so I was just sort of testing him out. Mm-hmm. But I would fire off this guided missile, and then I would just be like immobilized, and I would swear the missile was like off the screen for, you know, half a minute or something. I'm just sitting there, can't do anything, just totally vulnerable. So, you know, that was a character when that game came out on Wii. I was like, oh, I'd really like to be able to use Snake, but he was really hard for me to do anything with, and he is still just as hard to do anything with.
I thought there was a way to detonate his missile midair, but I can't remember now.
There might be, but I was just sitting there like Snake's just looking all over the place, and I guess I either didn't notice where the missile was or it was, you know, sort of off screen. But yeah, I sucked. I lost super badly using Snake.
Nah, that's all right.
I did manage to pull off a victory with Mega Man. I also managed to pull off a victory with the Ice Climbers on the Spirit Train stage. Glad that stage is back. That's always been a fun one.
Cool. Correct me if I'm wrong, was that always a 3DS exclusive, or was that also on Wii U? I don't remember ever seeing it on a big screen.
Yeah, that's correct. It was exclusive to the 3DS, and I kind of missed it on Wii U, but that's what they did. They took handheld game stages and put them on the handheld version of Smash Brothers, while they would try to stick with console-type stages for the console Smash Brothers, so... Yeah, I felt like I hadn't seen that one in a while, and that's probably why, because I just hadn't played the 3DS version since the Wii U one came out, you know, which is like, you know, a month or two after the 3DS one.
Cool. Yeah, it makes sense, because the Switch is both, so.
Yes. Yes, indeed. And, you know, they haven't really said if every single stage is going to be back, but, you know, the way this is the ultimate game with every single character, it really wouldn't surprise me if every stinking stage ended up being in there.
Yeah, pretty cool. Especially, like, the old, old ones. I think we were talking about that last episode.
Yep.
Just fun to see them updated.
Yeah, absolutely. So while I don't have, you know, a ton of great insights to provide, I can say, yes, going hands-on with this was great. It was fun. I played with the Switch Pro controller, and I had no issues with that whatsoever. So, yeah, this game is shaping up just as fantastic as you would imagine, and I cannot wait for the final product.
That's awesome. One thing I did notice in this version, once they started showing, like, sort of the gameplay demos during the E3 Treehouse segment...
What about it?
I really thought that some of the touches where it's like when you pick your character and then like the round starts, there's just some really cool like animations, and like you could just tell there was like a lot of care put into like making the presentation just look as awesome as possible. Did you notice anything like that?
I didn't notice anything specifically, but I mean, that's what Sakurai is known for. He does not skimp on the details. He always makes sure that everything, you know, looks great and is just as polished as it can possibly be. And naturally, that's what we are getting in Super Smash Bros. Ultimate.
Cool. I'm excited to play it, you jerk.
I also got to spend some time with Pokemon Let's Go Pikachu.
Okay.
And I played using the Pokeball Plus,
which,
you know, as you probably know, you hold it in one hand,
mm-hmm.
and the circle on the Pokeball is actually the joystick,
yeah.
plus it doubles as the A button. So you have to, you know, maneuver using that little ball thing, and then when you need to hit the A button, you press down on it with your thumb. And then there's also a B button that is hidden in the red stripe, and that rests under your index finger. So it is really cool how they've managed to turn a Pokeball into a fairly fully functional controller that you can use with one hand.
Yeah, and it rumbles and makes noise too, right?
Yeah, it has the sound effects for the Pokemon you catch. So, you know, after you throw it and catch a Pokemon, you can put it up to your ear and you'll hear it make its trademark 8-bit sound to know that it's been captured.
I heard that you can also, like, it almost makes it feel like there is a Pokemon inside this Pokeball with the HD rumble and all that.
Well, I wouldn't know if I would go that far, but yeah, it certainly has the rumble in there.
All right. We can pretend.
Anyway, the thing I have to point out about this game is that it does not have random battles.
Mm-hmm.
You don't actually fight the Pokemon when you're exploring, you know, in the tall grass. So every encounter, you know, you can see the Pokemon on the field before you encounter it,
mm-hmm.
and then there's no combat involved. It's just, you know, flicking your arm to throw a Pokeball and hoping to catch it. And, you know, just like Pokemon Go, you can use berries and stuff like that if you need to help yourself out. But, you know, there's no combat. So to me, it felt, you know, very slow and unsatisfying compared to you know, regular Pokemon games, you know, choosing your move, deciding how you want to fight, that stuff I find satisfying. But when all you're doing is entering the encounter, flicking your wrist to throw the Pokeball, and then, you know, just, you know, whether you get it or not, then you sort of have to mash the A button to get through, you know, a series of texts. That just was not satisfying to me. And especially using the Pokeball, you know, if you're playing with a regular controller, it's really easy just to hit the A button several times, like, okay, I don't care how much experience, I don't care about this, I don't care about that. But because you're pressing down on a joystick button, you know, that's not quite as simple and easy to do as pressing a regular button. Mm-hmm. It sort of slows that process down. And you have so many wild Pokemon encounters that just seem sort of meaningless. You just want to get through them as fast as possible. I just felt, you know, very underwhelmed. Hmm. And then, on top of that, there were just so many encounters. I mean, even though they're not random, you can't take, like, more than two steps without bumping into another Pokemon. And so, like, after playing this demo for, like, 5 minutes, I feel like I caught, you know, 35 Pidgeys or something like that. Like, what am I going to do with 35 Pidgeys? I don't know. I don't need 35 Pidgeys. Can I, you know, send them over to the professor who's going to grind them up and turn them into Pokemon candy? I don't know.
That's evil.
You didn't know that's what he's doing in Pokemon Go? Yeah, it's true.
I did not know.
Oh, yeah. Where do you think that Pokemon candy comes from, man?
I guess that's a very good point.
But yeah, just, you know, playing this game, I have to apologize to Ethan, who was on the show when we first discussed it. And I told him, nope, I think this is going to be a real mainline Pokemon game. And he's like, ah, I don't know. He was totally right. For the most part, I have to say, it just kind of feels like baby mode. Hmm. I mean, when you encounter other trainers, that's fun. And the environments are good recreations of, you know, classic Pokemon locales. But, you know, the lack of, you know, battles for the most part just really sucked the fun out for me. I feel like on the title screen, there should be like a regular mode that has battles like they used to be. And then a baby mode where you just flick to catch over and over and over and over.
Now, I've seen videos where they show like attack moves. Is that, did you not see any of that?
Oh, no. When you encounter other trainers, then you do get to have regular battles.
Gotcha.
And so that stuff is satisfying. It's like, well, all this stuff is in there. It has all the battles. It has all the moves. But you know how it is. When you're playing a Pokemon game, you know, and you're going through an area, you'll encounter maybe seven trainers.
Right.
While you might encounter, you know,
mostly
50
like
random battles.
Random Pokemon, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So the balance is way off, and that's why I feel like, you know, if all that stuff is in there, why not make it an option? I mean, I'm kind of serious about that. You know, have a hardcore mode that's that classic experience, and then have a casual mode that has this Pokemon Go style experience with all the, you know, flicking of the wrists and catching the Pokemon and getting your 35 Pidgeys and whatever. So I was let down by this. I actually canceled my pre-order after playing it.
Hmm.
So
wow,
that is where we're at right now.
Womp
yeah.
Womp.
Yeah.
Well, that's too bad. I was really hoping that there was some actual, like, gameplay, you know, combat. If this version that you played had fighting, I think I would probably be all in.
Oh, yeah, me too. I would, too, because, like I said, when it's there against the other trainers, it was great, and all that part feels wonderful. But if a vast majority of the game is just going to be flick and catch, flick and catch, flick and catch, then, yeah, I'm not very into it. You know, I'd like to give the final product a try, but like I said, for now, it is definitely not a must-have for me.
Yeah, especially for $100, you know.
Yeah.
I think that's where it really starts to be like, well, this thing better be awesome.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think it's just, you know, $60 if you don't want to get that controller with it, but even so, you know, I'd rather play the original, you know, black and white Pokemon game.
Sure.
On my 3DS for $10.
Sure. I mean, I will say the one thing that I took away from this is just how pretty a game like this kind of looks on the Switch.
Yeah, that is true too.
So, you know, high hopes for the future of the series on the console. But yeah, maybe this is, like you said, just kind of the baby mode. And Nintendo has done that in the past, right? We've had some games that were, I mean, not exactly like this, but there's been versions of games like this. You know, it just sounds like these, like, Hey You Pikachu or something like that, where it's just not part of the main series, which is unfortunate because I think, like you said, if it was it's this close to being that, it would be awesome to see. Plus, you can ride like a Charizard.
Yeah, I didn't get to do that, but that is definitely in there. Yeah, like you were saying, though, you know, there are not every Nintendo game is for every person. And unfortunately, this seems to be one of those games that is not aimed at everybody, but aimed at a more casual audience. So, you know, I'm not totally writing it off yet. We'll see. Yeah. We shall see.
Cool. Well, we will see.
On the other hand, I did very, very much enjoy getting to go hands-on with Mega Man 11.
Oh. Hoffman 11. Tell me about Mega Man 11.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie to you. This is probably my favorite game of the show alongside Smash Brothers.
Shocker.
Yeah, and you know me. I'm a huge Mega Man fan, so this is not a big surprise, but it felt like being a kid all over again. Just felt like classic Mega Man. You know, same kind of great level design, very, very smooth controls, excellent updated animation. You know, even though it's in widescreen now, it still, you know, felt right. The character movement still felt right. It was a lot of fun. And then on top of, you know, feeling like classic Mega Man, also had lots of cool new tricks and traps and level design elements. Like, I really enjoyed dodging the electric beams in Fuse Man's stage. And, you know, you've probably seen the video of these, you know, sort of a destructible block mini maze on a conveyor belt in Block Man's stage. And that was another obstacle I really, really enjoyed. But yeah, it was like a perfect blending of new and old as far as I could tell. Well, maybe not perfect. There are probably a couple things I would improve upon. Like, you really, I felt, had to use the charge shot almost constantly if you wanted to do well. And, you know, that's not like a big complaint.
Sure.
And I'm sure some people actually like it that way. But I kind of feel like maybe less is more would have been better. Like, if you have to use the charge shot on special occasions, that would have been perhaps better. And I probably could have gotten through the stages without constantly charging. But I feel like I would have taken more hits and, you know, not performed as well if I hadn't been doing that.
Right.
And then there was also this one mini-boss that showed up twice in one stage. I'm like, oh, well, that's kind of a waste. I wish they had given me a different mini-boss or something.
Right.
But again, it's a very, very minor complaint.
Right, and who knows? It's early. Maybe they'll adjust.
Right, right.
But the game, I mean, just from videos I saw online, I mean, it looks amazing. I love all the background detail. I love, like, the level design. I love the... I just love the way that they've kind of adapted Mega Man into the new HD era.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it clearly is not, you know, the same old Mega Man, but it kind of just feels like that memory of classic Mega Man, and that's what I think is important.
Right.
Also, the challenges here in full force. There were four selectable difficulties. When I played, I chose normal mode, but there were two easier difficulties. But man, on normal, it was a pretty tough game. You know, I stood in line for a while. You know, I watched people play as I was waiting. Nobody was able to get through the stage and beat the boss. Most players weren't even able to get to the boss.
Wow.
Yeah.
Brutal.
So definitely a tough game. Now, you could play it on newcomer mode. You could play it on casual mode. I don't think anyone there was doing that. That's not how I want to play. But it's nice that those are there if the game gets too tough.
Totally. Yeah, nobody at E3 wants to be seen playing baby mode.
But yeah, the game just, you know, it hit all the right notes. It was really, really fun. You know, there are, you know, maybe those couple, you know, areas for improvement. But yeah, I just had a blast playing this one. And it seems a lot of other people did too. The game seems to have taken home a lot of E3 awards. You know, it's kind of funny because I don't think the classic Mega Man games took home awards. This is like basically the same thing.
Yeah.
But I think that just goes to show, you know, how good the series is overall and how hungry people are for another game like this after not getting one for quite a while. So, yeah, I am very happy with this one and obviously can't wait to play it some more as well.
Yeah, I would say, you know, right up there with Super Smash Brothers, this is a game I really want to play.
Yep, certainly is for me. Of course, I also spent some time going hands-on with the other upcoming Mega Man games, those being Mega Man X Legacy Collection 1 and 2. You know, there's not a whole lot to say about them. They are what they are. Yep, it's classic Mega Man X games, 1 and 2 and 3 all the way up through Mega Man X8. Obviously, the first one is better because it has the better Mega Man X games. The second one has the more questionable games. I got to play a little bit of the X Challenge, which is where you get to fight two bosses at once, and that seemed cool. But the timer on the game was pretty limited. I think it timed out after I beat one of the two bosses I was fighting, and most of the time I would only be able to play one stage before it would time out on me. So, you know, I played all the games before. I know what I'm getting into. You know, so far it seems like a very, very good port, and glad it's coming to Switch.
Cool. Seems like it's all there.
Yep, yep, very much so.
Yeah.
I also got to spend some time with Starlink Battle for Atlas. That is, of course, the Ubisoft game that has Fox McCloud and the Arwing in it.
That's right. So I know nothing about this game besides, you know, obviously the debut trailer. What did you think?
Well, I really, really like how ambitious the game is. You compare it a little bit to No Man's Sky. I think maybe it was kind of like that, and it really kind of is. You can fly through space and visit a variety of planets and then go explore, you know, things on the planet's surface. So, you know, it's certainly, you know, not that big a scope, but when you made that comparison, it was actually fairly appropriate.
Hmm. And so is there any story in it? Because I know that was kind of one of the big complaints about No Man's Sky.
There is a story. I don't really know what it is, but I was being given mission objectives. And so what I did during my demo was I, you know, found this one planet where I needed to go to. I flew down to the surface, and then I had several objectives to complete. First, I had to hack into this object and then fend off a bunch of enemies that were trying to stop my hacking. Then after that, I had to go to a different location and destroy this big tower by destroying these outer nodes and then, you know, blast the core that was in the center tower and, you know, smash it that way. And then after that, I had to go to another location that was a big boss fight against this big old spider-like creature. And you had to, you know, hit it in various weak spots and, you know, then, you know, shoot it in its face while it was vulnerable. And that was a pretty tough fight. I didn't actually succeed in beating that fight and getting through the entire demo. But it was interesting seeing that all that stuff is in there. And I hope that the full game has that same level of variety.
Yeah.
One thing that was interesting about the game is that once you do get down to the planet's surface, you can sort of land your ship and your ship sort of becomes, you know, a ground-based vehicle, and it feels like, you know, a typical ground-based shooter in some ways. Like there's even a jump button so you can, you know, jump and strafe while you're moving around on the ground. I feel like it would have been cooler if your ship, you know, transformed, you know, kind of like an R-Wing into a Landmaster, right, or something like that. Because like, well, why am I in an airplane that's jumping around the ground? That doesn't really make any sense.
Yeah, what's going on there?
But, you know, from a gameplay perspective, it does make sense to, you know, be able to do that and mix things up in that fashion.
Cool.
However, I did have a couple of issues with the game. And, you know, maybe just the guy who was showing me the demo didn't know the controls that well. But, you know, you basically do control the game, you know, very similar to a first-person or a third-person shooter, where a lot of your movement is on the right stick.
Mm.
But also, your acceleration button was A. So if you want to accelerate and steer simultaneously, you need to grow like a second thumb or another hand or something like that. That seemed like a really, really poor way to do things. And, you know, maybe there's another way to do it that I just wasn't aware of. But, you know, if I wanted to, you know, fly to an objective that was kind of far away and also be able to steer at the same time, there wasn't a good way to do it.
Yeah, that's weird.
As far as the guy, you know, showing the demo knew anyway.
Right.
So hopefully that changes or gets updated. The other issue I had with it was that the interface for the ships and the weapons is super clunky. Like, the menus almost made no sense.
Oh boy.
Like, I wasn't sure if I was equipping something or unequipping something. And, you know, changing ships was somewhat difficult. And, you know, maybe when you have the real thing in hand, you're using those little models and you can just swap in one weapon for the other. Maybe that's, like, the simple, easy way to do things. But the in-game menu for doing it was very, very clunky, which seems like a problem for a game that seems to be aimed at a younger set.
Yeah.
So, you know, certainly not perfect, but again, I really appreciate a lot of the cool things it was trying to do. And in a lot of ways, it is delivering the kind of experience I would want from a Star Fox game.
Cool. And the Star Fox functionality was not in it in the demo?
It was. You could play as the R-Wing. There were four different ships you could play as, and I chose the R-Wing first, which was a horrible decision because I didn't know what I was doing, and I got destroyed almost immediately, and then I had to just rely on my other three ships for the rest of the demo.
Okay.
I could not play as Fox. I was stuck playing as the main character, but still, you know, kind of cool to be able to see the R-Wing in action while it lasted.
Cool. Well, this definitely sounds interesting to me. I know you pre-ordered this, right? Just in case. What do you think?
I did.
Are you going to keep your pre-order?
I'm not sure at this point. I'm not sure.
Oh, man. Jury's still out, huh?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, seeing the interface issues and that control problem I had, it's kind of put me on the fence. So I'm still undecided.
You're really bumming me out here, man.
Sorry.
No, we'll see. I'm gonna take a positive outlook on this one.
Yeah, there's definitely good things about it.
Cool.
I also went over to the Sega booth and tried to check out as many titles as I could. I sadly did not get to play Valkyria Chronicles 4 because there was like a crazy 2-hour line. Because I think if you played that demo, you got a free hat or something. So it's like 2-hour line, free hat. And I just want to play the game. Can I play the game? I should have flashed my media badge and tried to cut to the front of the line or something. But I didn't want to be a jerk about it. I was like, 2 hours, forget it. The game looks great, though. The graphics are beautiful. I love the, you know, painterly aesthetic that they have for that series, and it looks just as good and beautiful as ever on the Nintendo Switch. So I am absolutely looking forward to that one when it comes out later this year.
Cool. Anything else from that booth stand out?
Well, I did get to play Team Sonic Racing.
That's cool.
Yeah, there were only 6 characters in the demo. You could play as Sonic, Tails, Knuckles, Shadow, Rouge, or the Dr. Robotnik robot. And I think there was only one stage on display, so it was kind of hard to get, you know, a real good feel of everything. It kind of just felt, you know, like your typical kart racing game. You know, lots of boost pads and items to use. But I did get to see a little bit of the team dynamic in action. Hmm. Like, all of your characters are ranked that are on your team together. So even if you come in first, if your partners, you know, end up coming in really low in the rankings, then you might still not win.
Gotcha.
And I'm not really sure how you can increase their chances. Like, I know you can pass items to your teammates, and then you can do a super team boost after you've done, you know, some certain number of teamwork-related maneuvers. But, you know, as for how it all comes together, I'm really not sure. But at this point, all I can say is it does feel like a very solid kart racer, and it too seems pretty promising.
Does it look pretty?
Oh, it looks quite good. And, you know, is it the next coming of Mario Kart? I don't know. But obviously it's something in the same camp. If you are a Mario Kart fan, you would probably do well to check this out.
Cool. Any Big the Cat?
Not yet. But, you know, we can still cross our fingers and hold out hope. He could still be in there. You never know.
Awesome.
Also got to try out Shining Resonance Refrain, which is an action RPG from Sega. And this one really hasn't been on my radar very much at all, even though it comes out pretty soon. It's hitting on July 10th. It's a little bit like the Tails series from Namco, in that you're running around in an environment, and then when you bump into an enemy character, you're sort of transported to a battlefield, and then you have these real-time action-packed battles. The main character is someone called Yuma, the Dragon Resonator. Like, he has the soul of a dragon inside. And then there are some pretty interesting other characters as well. I got to play as Sonya the Knight, and then also this archer character. And I got to fight some enemy dragons that looked really, really cool. One of the things I liked about this game a whole lot is that the character designs were really, really impressive. Love the characters, love the dragons. The visual style, you know, really intrigued me.
Cool. Sounds interesting.
It's also said that it's going to have a very in-depth crafting system, and it will have these knight events where you'll be able to date quite a number of characters, both male and female, in your party.
So do you think this is going to be one of the ones you pick up?
I'm not sure yet. I would definitely need to play it more before I make a decision. I'm a little bit concerned about how much I'll enjoy it in the long run, but, you know, after playing the demo for like 20 minutes, I definitely have a good feeling about it, so it's very, very possible.
All right, cool. What else did you play, Hoff?
Well, there was a whole bunch of NIS America stuff that was also on display at the Sega booth. And so I finally got to play Ease 8, Lacrimosa of Dana, or Dana, I don't know. At any rate, you know, it's the latest in that series of action RPGs. And I got to try that out a little bit. Got to play as 3 different characters, each that have different weapons and specialties. And you can switch between them at will. Apparently later in the game there are even more characters you can acquire, but I guess there's only 3 in your party at once. The demo for this, you know, was kind of set in a tricky area of the game, and I got my butt kicked pretty good. I found myself running away from a lot of enemies because I was taking so much damage, and then I wound up fighting this big purple turtle boss. And, you know, I thought I was doing okay against him, but you know, my dodge failed at a crucial moment, and he did me in. So I didn't really get to experience as much of that game as I would have liked, but, you know, the E series is always good. It seems to be, you know, very much cut from the same cloth as previous recent entries, and so, you know, it seems like it's going to be pretty darn neat. The Switch version of the game includes all the content that was previously DLC on the PS4 version, including a classic armor look for the main character, Adol. And this one's not too far away. It's coming out, actually, I think it's like next week or something.
Wow. Yeah, it looks good. You know, and it's always nice that the Switch is getting a lot of titles like this.
Yeah, for sure. I've been wanting Falcom to come back to Nintendo systems for a long time now, so I'm very excited if for no other reason than that.
Cool.
I got to try out SNK 40th Anniversary Collection, and you know that's pretty much just what you would expect. It's a whole bunch of you know, very accurate arcade and NES ports from days gone by. You know, I played a shooter called Prehistoric Isle that I'd never experienced before, and I sucked and got my butt kicked on that. And then I played POW, which is an arcade beat-em-up, and I sucked and got my butt kicked on that, too.
Wow, you got your butt kicked a lot at this E3.
I did. But you know, the good thing about these games is that a lot of times, you know, they are meant to eat your quarters. They are meant to be quarter munchers. So fortunately, you can put in more tokens and you know, just keep on playing if you need those extra continues.
Seems like a solid entry if you're into this kind of stuff.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, without Virtual Console, this is going to be the only way you're going to be able to get a lot of games like this.
Too soon, Chris. Too soon.
Anyway, speaking of games that have sort of a retro appeal, got to go hands-on with Monster Boy and the Cursed Kingdom.
Yeah.
And that is, you know, a brand new original game that's very much inspired by those classic Wonder Boy titles. And this ended up being another one of my favorite games at the show.
Cool.
You know, it's a side-scrolling action-adventure. I thought the graphics were great. The animation was very fluid. The controls were very solid. And, you know, it was very much in the vein of Wonder Boy, where you get these transformations and can turn into other characters, like a frog that uses his tongue as a grappling hook, or you can turn into this pig who, well, I'm not really sure what the pig can do. I know he could, like, sniff things out, but I didn't really ever get a good chance to use his ability.
I mean, he's wearing an eye patch and a scarf. It's kind of rad.
Yes.
Or a handkerchief.
Yeah, it's a great character design.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, unfortunately, his attacks left something to be desired, so I really didn't use him as much as I used the human form and the frog form. But, you know, in the demo, you know, I was able to acquire a good variety of items. You know, I got a shield to knock back attacks. I got these steel boots that let me, you know, go underwater and explore the bottom of the sea. And then the first stage of the demo ended with this boss battle against this giant killer squid that would, you know, spray ink on, you know, the screen, basically, and obscure your vision. So it was a fun boss fight, just a fun game all around. Again, I really, really liked the animation. Just some of the stuff was really funny and cute, like the little expressions on these enemy crabs you're fighting. So yeah, this is one that I've been anticipating for a long time, and I am glad to see it's turning out really, really well.
Yeah, I'm watching a video of it. It looks really pretty. Kind of almost reminds me of the Mega Man, like in the terms of just look, but with a little bit more like art style going on in the background.
Well, maybe. This one, I believe, is completely, totally hand-drawn 2D, whereas Mega Man is polygons. But, yeah, they both have a very similar colorful look, I guess.
Yeah, and just a lot of, like, effects over the top of the background imagery and all that.
Yeah, that's true, too. While I was over there, I also tried out Super Neptunia RPG. Now, are you familiar with the Neptunia series at all?
No, sir.
I haven't ever played it before, either. Obviously, this is the first time it is coming to Switch, and I think probably the first time it's coming to Nintendo systems. The gimmick to this series is that it's sort of inspired by the console wars of generations past. So, like, you know, some of the characters, you know, are inspired by, you know, the PlayStation or the Saturn or the Dreamcast or the Super Famicom or whatever. I didn't really get to experience too much of that angle of the game. And in fact, there's a lot I didn't really get to take in about the game just because it was still pretty early. Like, there were a lot of NPCs I couldn't interact with yet. I will say, it's very interesting the way it mixes turn-based fighting with, like, you know, 2D side-scrolling exploration. And it is also a very, very pretty anime-style game. Looks fantastic, and also has some interesting platforming style elements thrown in as well.
Cool.
It was, you know, too early to really form much of an opinion about it, but I'm glad to see the series is coming out on Switch, and yeah, could be fun. Definitely could be fun.
Cool to know.
Meanwhile, over at XSEED, I finally got to go hands-on with Gal Metal. And, you know, that was the one that was announced a few weeks ago. And, you know, we knew from the trailer it was a music game. We knew that you are a girl band fighting off, like, evil space octopi. But from the trailer, I didn't get any grasp of what the gameplay was like, but now I've actually gone hands-on, I've actually been able to try it out, and, you know, finally, you know, sort of know what the gameplay is all about.
Yeah, and what do you think?
You know, it sounds really simple. All you have to do is stay on the beat as you shake the Joy-Cons. And, you know, as the beat happens, you could be, like, doing something really simple. You know, shake the right Joy-Con four times. You know, boom, 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 boom. You could be the left Joy-Con four times, or you could mix it up. There are any number of ways you could do it. There are various patterns you could choose from, and, you know, the more complex patterns you choose, the higher you will score. And there are different patterns that are in different families, and if you chain patterns and families together, that will also increase your score. So you can indeed, you know, choose whatever drumming pattern you'd like from a, you know, predetermined set list, sort of. And it's up to you to just sort of combine those interesting ways and, you know, therefore perform well and get a high score. However, while it's super easy to stay on the beat if you're practicing and there's a beat indicator on the screen, once the real game would start and there is no beat indicator on screen, I was like, I have no idea what I'm doing. What is the beat? Where is it? What am I? I'm just shaking this thing randomly. So it sounds super simple at first, but then when you play, it's like, oh, wow, this is actually pretty tough.
Interesting.
And I was informed that most people had a lot of trouble even getting past, you know, the first level in the demo. So, right. Yeah, there's a lot more to it.
Part of that could just be, you know, on the show floor of E3 and not being able to maybe hear it as well, or not having your time to, like, you know, really kind of sink into it. But
Possibly. But they had a pretty good sound setup, so I just chalk it up to it being a fairly challenging game. But, you know, I guess we'll see more once the game comes out.
I'm intrigued. You know, I always like rhythm-based games, and the fact that, you know, the Switch kind of just, you don't have to buy any peripherals for it, just kind of works like that.
Right.
It's kind of cool, and I like the aesthetic, and the name is hilarious.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's definitely worth a look. Also, while I was at the XSEED booth, I checked out Freedom Planet for Switch, and the game, you know, it really isn't any different from the one that has been released previously on Wii U and other systems, but it's a very fun, colorful, Sonic-inspired 2D platformer. You know, you get to run up a lot of walls and do lots of speed-based mechanics, you know, run on the ceiling a little bit, go through loops, lots of neat stuff like that. This is the same game that was released before, but now you can do it portably. And, you know, if you like Sonic the Hedgehog, if you like 2D Sonic the Hedgehog, especially, this game, you should totally check it out. It's got, you know, super long levels as well. You know, lots of good content in there.
Yeah, it looks exactly like Sonic.
Yeah, you can definitely tell where the game gets its inspiration, for sure.
But that's not a bad thing, yeah.
No, not at all. It's not like we're getting other Sonic games every other month or anything like that.
Totally.
So let's move on from there onto some other E3-related announcements that we really didn't get to talk about last week. One cool announcement is that the folks at Telltale revealed that Walking Dead, the final season, is indeed coming to Switch.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think that's, like, it's great that Telltale's finally got a game on the Switch.
Yeah, it feels like it should have been something that happened, like, a year ago. Hadn't happened till now, but, yay, it's good to see they're finally jumping on the bandwagon.
Yeah, and The Walking Dead is a really solid series on their part.
Yeah, I played through the first season and some of the content after that and quite enjoyed it. So, you know, I think that the Telltale engine is certainly getting long in the tooth. It's very good to see that it come to Switch, and hopefully it means good things for the future.
Yeah, definitely.
The guys at Nicolas announced that Remilore is coming out on Switch. That is a procedurally generated action RPG with two-player co-op action that looks fairly promising.
Sounds cool.
And then over at Bandai Namco, they announced that Tales of Vesperia is coming out on Switch.
All right.
That's the latest in their action RPG series. You know, I've always, you know, been impressed by the Tales series, but it seems like it's one that always falls by the wayside. And every time a new one comes out, I'm like, man, maybe this time I'll really get to sit down and play it. But I really haven't been able to since, like, you know, Tales of Symphonia came out back on the GameCube.
Yeah, it always kind of feels like the redheaded stepchild RPG.
But, you know, this one looks pretty impressive. I've heard good things about it when it came out, you know, over in Japan, I think originally on PlayStation 3. And certainly I would love to give this one a go.
Cool.
Now, there was also some Bethesda news, right?
Oh, yeah.
Some stuff we didn't really get a chance to talk about last week, like the Elder Scrolls Legends. That's probably one you're excited about, huh?
Now, that's the card-based game, right?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, definitely excited. You know, it's interesting to see that it's going to be on tablet and phone and Switch.
Mm-hmm. And be able to transfer your progress from the mobile version to the Switch version.
Yeah, and that, I mean, I think anytime there's functionality like that, that's great. You know, especially because, you know, you have access to your phone far more than you have access to your Switch.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe this will prompt Blizzard to put Hearthstone on Switch.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this could be a precursor to that. Who knows? That would be cool. And then Fallout Shelter was not only announced, but released. Did you grab that one? Did you play it? If so, what do you think?
I did. I haven't played it yet. I did play it a little bit when it was on phone, or sorry, tablet rather. But yeah, we'll see. I haven't played this one yet. Have you?
No, I'm in the same boat. I downloaded it right away, but I haven't had a chance to play it yet either. So that's something on both of our to-do lists.
That's right.
But hey, it's a free game, and it's cool. It's awesome that it's on Switch, for sure.
Yeah, and nice to see more love and support from Bethesda.
Yes, absolutely. A bunch of cool announcements from Limited Run Games. They revealed that their upcoming lineup on Switch includes Golf Story.
Oh, wow.
Cosmic Star Heroine. Layers of Fear, which is a horror game from a Bloober team. Dust and Elysian Tale. Possibly Double Switch. They aren't sure about that. And then possibly the biggest one is that they are doing the physical version of Yooka-Laylee, which hits in August.
Wow. What do you think about all that?
Well, obviously, you're not going to get any of those because they're all physical releases and you're not into that. as for me, you know, I've been meaning to get Golf Story. I have heard so many great things about it. Mm-hmm. It just hasn't happened yet for whatever reason, but now that I know a physical version is coming out, maybe that will finally be the one to get.
Hmm. It's weird because I almost have a tendency to want to pick up the physical version of Golf Story.
Ah.
but then I remember my tendencies and I laugh.
Come, join us. Yeah, I wish I could say I was super excited about a physical version of Yooka-Laylee. I totally would have bought that if it had come out the same time as the digital version, but, you know, I was a little bit underwhelmed by that game, so I will not be picking that one up, I'm sad to say.
This. Now, Golf Story, I highly recommend. I hope you...
everybody does.
I hope you do pick that up, and I'd like to hear your thoughts at some point.
Well, I will definitely be getting it sooner or later, one way or the other.
Cool.
That's for sure. Now, did you see the announcement from Devolver Digital about My Friend Pedro?
I did not. What's up with that?
Oh, man, you are missing out. This is this crazy-looking, violent, acrobatic, side-scrolling shooter. You play as this masked guy who's just, like, basically dancing through the levels. I mean, they described it as a ballet, and it totally looks like that. He's just jumping and spinning and swinging and flipping and pirouetting through these levels while, you know, dual-wielding pistols and shooting up lots of bad guys and, you know, using environmental stuff like, you know, clubbing them to death with a skateboard and other objects. Oh, and also he is friends with a talking sentient banana.
Wow, yeah, it looks really good. I'm watching a gameplay video.
It looks insane.
It looks like John Wick the game, but better.
To me, what it reminds me of is Deadpool. The way the character looks and the fact that he's kind of crazy is totally Deadpool. I feel like the devs want to make a Deadpool game, and then they're like, oh, someone else has the rights to that? Okay, we'll just make it about a talking sentient banana.
Yeah, you're right. It definitely has a Deadpool vibe.
Yeah, especially with its bizarre sense of humor, the way the character design is. Yeah, that's how it feels to me. Anyway, you know, who knows if it's going to be good, but it looks ridiculous, and it's coming early 2019. And again, very happy that something like this, something so crazy, is coming out on Switch.
Yeah, no kidding. And I vote for Pedro then.
All right. The last thing I wanted to mention about, you know, these belated E3 announcements, possibly the craziest, most bizarre announcement of the entire show, Just Dance 2019. Obviously, it's coming out on Switch, but it's also coming out on Wii U
and
on Wii.
Wow. Can you believe it?
No, I really can't. I mean, the last version, Just Dance 2018, came out on both systems, Wii U and Wii. I'm like, well, this has to be the last games that's ever going to be made for these systems. Nope, they totally proved me wrong. And somehow, I mean, a Wii game I can almost believe because, you know, so many of those systems were sold and there's, you know, a trillion of them out there. But Wii U, why would they even do a Wii U version of this game?
Yeah, that is ridiculous. A little bizarre. And is that going to be like a physical release, I assume?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
It is indeed.
Let's get the landfill ready in New Mexico.
Well, who knows? I mean, maybe they're all going to make like 1,000 copies. It'll be the most valuable Wii U game ever. You never know.
Yeah, you don't. That's really funny.
Yeah, it's a very strange announcement from Ubisoft.
Do you think this will be the last one?
I would like to say so, but you know, at this rate, never say never. I'll say it will be, but who the heck knows?
It's kind of fun.
I guess the one other little thing of note from Ubisoft for Switch is that they gave a release date for the Mario and Rabbids DK Adventure DLC. It'll be out next week, either on the 25th or the 26th, depending on whether or not you are a Season Pass owner. So that is great news for Mario plus Rabbids fans.
Yeah, it's cool.
I think that takes care of our post-E3 wrap-up. So let us go on intermission, and then we come back. We will discuss other things. All right, we are back and we are ready to continue this week's episode of Power Pros Podcast, this time with some non-E3 related stuff. Pete, let's talk about some recent releases. I guess this does kind of tie into E3 since this game was announced during the show. That is Arcade Archives Donkey Kong. It is out now and it is on Switch.
Yeah, what a surprise, right?
Yeah, I mean, we knew that lots more Arcade Archive stuff was on the way, but we did not know that was one of the games, and according to common wisdom, it was not going to be coming, because supposedly this game is somehow held up in some legal wranglings, but that was apparently not the case. The game is out, and finally, an arcade perfect version of Donkey Kong, which has never been released on Nintendo consoles or any consoles outside of being that arcade game in Donkey Kong 64, it's finally available. Can download it, grab it for $8. So did you pick it up?
I have not yet, but I do plan to. It just seems like a cool thing to have on your Switch.
Yeah, absolutely. I did go and grab it myself pretty much as soon as I was able to. It was interesting because, you know, I really haven't played the arcade version of this game in a long, long time. And I was probably, you know, super young and don't even know if I got past the first level. So it was interesting to see that this version of the game has three different versions. And the international version, which was the one I played first, you know, I played through the first stage, and then after that, it took me straight to the fourth stage, you know, the one where you undo the bolt, and Donkey Kong, like, falls on his head.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm like, well, what happened to stages 2 and 3? I mean, that's the cool thing about this, is that, you know, most versions of the game do not have the second level, which is the Pie Factory,
right,
or Cement Factory, as it actually is, but it looks like a Pie Factory. I'm going to keep calling it the Pie Factory.
You're a Pie Factory.
So I thought, like, well, is something wrong with my game? Did I change some setting? Did I only give it 2 levels? I don't know. Then I went and I played, you know, the Japanese version of the game, and that started me on the normal, you know, level playthrough. First, you go through the traditional girders. Then after that, you go to the Pie Factory. Then after that, it's that level, you know, with the bouncing jack that, you know, always crushes Mario on the head. And then after that, you get to the fourth level with the bolts and the falling on Donkey Kong's brain.
Right.
So, yeah, it was nice and fun to be able to experience that. You know, there was that, you know, arcade edition that came out on 3DS a while back that did have the Pie Factory put in, but it wasn't really the original edition, even though it's called that in its title. It was, you know, an upgraded version of the NES game. So it was 3 NES levels with, like, you know, a brand new level that was like the NES-ized version of the Pie Factory.
Crazy.
But, you know, yeah, now I don't have to play that. If I want to play Donkey Kong, I can play the actual real deal on the Switch. So that is really cool to get. There is, you know, one kind of weird thing about it, though. The sound effect for Mario's run does not seem authentic.
Hmm.
Were you aware of that?
I'm not. Have you looked into that at all?
I've seen other people talking about it, yeah, and I don't think there's a good explanation as to why, but, you know, if you remember that game, I think even on the NES version, like, the sound sort of varies as Mario is running. It doesn't sound like the same effect over and over again. But in this case, it actually does. It's just like repeating the same sound without any variance in the pitch. And, you know, for someone who, you know, was sort of familiar with these sounds, kind of etched in my brain, it was kind of weird to encounter it that way. And, you know, I don't think that Hamster, the publisher of these Arcade Archives games, ever really patches its stuff. But I would kind of like to see them patch that, because it seems like such an odd little thing in what's otherwise a pretty amazing arcade port. And it's like, you know, if we're going to finally get these games, supposedly, you know, in all their original arcade glory, let's make sure they really are in their original arcade glory. So I'd like to see that tweaked.
Yeah, no kidding.
Even so, I don't think that should, you know, keep anyone away from playing the game. It is great just to have, you know, some of these arcade archives, it's like, oh, well, this is a curiosity, but I mean, this is an all-time classic, so definitely worth picking up. Questionable sound and all.
Yeah, I just remember that game being so hard. Like, the average game lasts, like, 2 minutes.
yeah, it's still a little tough, but I'm certainly better than I used to be. Like I said, you know, I probably, you know, never even got past that first level when I played in the arcade as a kid.
Right.
But, you know, now I can get through, you know, at least a few rounds.
Yeah. Now, did you also hear that they announced Sky Skipper? Have you heard about this?
I did hear about that. And apparently this is an unreleased arcade game that I don't really know anything about. Obviously, I don't have any nostalgia for it.
Right.
You know, is there a reason why it was never released? Is it maybe not so good? I don't know. but certainly, as sort of a lost NES game, this would fall under that umbrella of something that is definitely a historical curiosity for Nintendo fans, and I'm very interested in seeing what it's all about.
Yeah, I almost feel more compelled to pick that up because it's never been playable for me, at least.
Uh-huh.
But and also just like looking at it on the internet, there's some really amazing character art. Like one character kind of looks like a, I don't know, like a funky Donkey Kong looking character.
So Funky Kong? Funky Kong's in the game?
I'm gonna say like a misshapen Donkey Kong.
Very bizarre.
Yeah, but
yeah, I don't even know what kind of game it is.
Yeah, I don't really understand either. I watched a little gameplay video of it. I still don't really understand, but you're basically in a plane and you can, like, you have to land to gain fuel back, and then you fly around dropping bombs on stuff.
Well, it definitely sounds interesting.
Yeah. But anyways, it's cool to see the hits continue by Hamster.
Yeah, yeah. It just, unfortunately, you know, now they seem like they've kind of unloaded all the good stuff. So unless they've also got Donkey Kong Jr. waiting in the wings or maybe Super Punch-Out, it's going to be like, well, we got Urban Champion next. We're going to be like, oh, no thanks. So yeah, it'll be cool to see what other stuff they unearth.
Yeah, definitely.
And speaking of cool new releases that came out last week, the Splatoon Octo expansion is indeed out. Pete, have you been playing this? And if so, what do you think?
Well, I have been playing it. I
nice.
Decided to pick it up since not everybody got
or
to go.
Nice, that's the kids say.
Since not everybody got to go to E3, you know, I figured I would join in the fun and play Splatoon Octo expansion.
Okay.
That was kind of a shot at you.
I was trying to ignore that, yes.
Yeah, so Splatoon Octo expansion is a $20 expansion. You know, if you're a fan of the single player in Splatoon 2, this adds to that and expands on that.
Yeah, that's pretty much what this is. It is a 80 mission single player expansion. I mean, that's the bulk of it, right?
Yeah, and I think the first game, do you remember? I think it had like 30 levels or something like that.
No, I'm not sure.
But yeah, as far as content, it kind of knocks it out of the park with the amount of levels and kind of bang for your buck with it being a $20 purchase.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot.
Yeah, and it kind of adds into this whole, like, you know, I'm not super familiar with the Splatoon lore. I didn't really play the first one on Wii U too much, so I kind of jumped into Splatoon 2 more than anything.
Okay.
So, first off, what's cool about this one is that you get to play as the Octolings.
Right. Thus, Octo Expansion.
Yeah, exactly. And you get to hang out with Captain Cuttlefish, which
right.
has maybe one of the best names in Nintendo history. And the whole game takes place in this basically like a subway, and
the whole thing, huh?
Not a sandwich shop, by the way, like an actual, you know, mode of transportation.
Yeah, bummer.
Yeah, and Captain Cuttlefish is kind of your leader, and even though Captain Cuttlefish is kind of there, he's not really the main guy who gives you missions. That is a guy named C.Q. Cumber. And
I see what they did there.
He's the little conductor of the train you're on. And so the way it works, you don't really have a main, like a hub, like an overworld, kind of like you did in the original Splatoon 2 single player.
Okay.
But instead, you can access this menu where you kind of look at a map of the subway system, and you can complete missions to like kind of explore more ground.
Huh.
So it's kind of hard to explain, but essentially there's multiple paths, as you could imagine, a subway map. And as you unlock more levels, you start to realize that there's multiple paths. So sometimes you can go left and right, and sometimes you can go up and down. But you basically just kind of pick these levels at random. They give you a little brief overview of what you're getting into, but it's not super clear. You know, it'll be like, shoot 20 boxes in the time allowed. Anyways, getting into the gameplay itself, these missions are much more varied and much more interesting, I think.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
Than the original Splatoon 2 single player.
Yeah, and one of the things that Nintendo was promoting was like, this game has new challenges you won't find in the main game. So I was very curious about what kind of new things you'll get to encounter.
Yeah, I think I think one of the easiest ways to explain it is it's kind of like the shrines in Zelda.
Huh, okay.
It's just these little non sequitur. They have nothing to do with each other, but you jump into a level and, you know, it tells you, okay, you know, here you have to shoot a magic eight ball. Maybe not magic. Here you have to shoot an eight ball into the goal. And so in the level, you are basically shooting this little eight ball through the whole level, up ramps, down ramps, onto moving platforms, over bouncy pads, so that you really have to like keep track of where it's going and go, you know, destroy enemies while you're trying to guide this thing. And if it falls off the level,
you
got to start over.
Yeah.
There's also levels where, you know, you can get in a ball and you can roll yourself. So you're like in this like American Gladiators kind of ball.
You're like a big hamster ball, huh?
Yeah, exactly. There's other ones where, you know, I think I mentioned this, you got to shoot a certain number of crates in a time allotted. And it's really difficult because in Splatoon, you eventually run out of ink. So you have to be very strategic with how many shots you fire versus how many times you kind of dip in for the more ink.
Hmm.
I will say this expansion pack is hard. I first started off, I beat maybe like 5 missions right in a row. They were kind of the first ones you can really access. And I was thinking, pretty good, you know, nothing too amazing here. But after you get kind of past that initial kind of kiddie phase, beyond that, the difficulty really ramps up.
Huh, well, now you kind of got me worried. Because I got to say, thanks to a very generous friend who just gifted me this game, I am all ready to dive in and start playing this new mode. And, you know, I just fired it up. Basically, all I got to do was, you know, create my character, and then we start recording this podcast, so I haven't really been able to dive in yet, but I'm very much looking forward to sinking my teeth into it, so to speak. But you know, without having spent a whole lot of time in Splatoon 2, like, you know, the last time I played it was, you know, like a year ago, right when it came out, it's like, oh man, I hope this isn't gonna be too overwhelming. I feel like I need some sort of, you know, new tutorial to get me back into things.
Yeah, totally. You know, I actually lucked out. I never beat the single player of the original Splatoon 2. So what I did was, I think I only had like a level and a half to get through. So before officially jumping into the Octo expansion, I basically just played the last level and a half, which was definitely a great tutorial and reminder of why that game's really fun.
Yeah, maybe I should do the same thing. I'm only in the second world of the regular single player mode.
Yeah, I powered through it, and it doesn't take too long to finish. It does get a little hard towards the end, but it's always kind of fun and didn't take too long. Also, the last boss is really fun. This is in Splatoon 2, not the expansion pack, just so you know.
Yes, understood.
That being said, Splatoon 2 Octo Expansion is really cool. It seems like the bang for your buck, the $20 for the 80 levels, and then the fact that it doesn't really affect the rest of the game is kind of like the perfect marriage of how you want additional content.
Well, it kind of does, because I hear that after you finish it, you actually unlock the Octolings for multiplayer.
Oh, wow.
It does affect it a little bit.
All right.
But yeah, for the most part, it's true.
Yeah, pretty cool all around. You know, and they also add in a lot of stuff. There's a lot of dialogue between the characters. So you get to kind of learn a little bit more lore, sort of the history between these characters and all that.
Okay.
There's this really random, like you're in like a chat room with Pearl and Marina and Captain Cuttlefish. And they just like have this funny back and forth banter.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of make fun of Cuttlefish for being an old man and not really knowing how to use a computer.
Mm.
If you're into that kind of little side story stuff, it's really fun.
Sounds entertaining.
I do get the feeling that at Nintendo headquarters, that along with the shrines in Zelda, they basically just go, hey, Hideki, do you have a free moment to design a level? And this guy who works on probably Animal Crossing or something goes, yeah, I'll take a look. And then, you know, that's how they like bust out these like 80 levels and they're totally all over the map. It's like you just have these random guys like making, you know, random levels and they just add it together sort of non sequitur style and it totally works.
Oh, sounds good to me.
Yeah, I'm not mad about it. It's an awesome thing to have. So
cool. Anything else really stand out to you about this mode?
There was one other thing. Some of the levels, as I mentioned, you know, you kind of jump into, you are recommended a gun to use.
Okay.
There's also two other guns that you can usually use on levels, and they give you different value for completing the level.
Huh, okay.
So even if you can beat the level with the gun recommended, you can also jump around and try a different gun because some of the challenges vary wildly based on which weapon you're using. Because some shoot, you know, long range and accurate and some do not. And it totally changes kind of the gameplay feel on those levels. So,
okay, good to know.
All in all, total recommendation. And, you know, I think that anybody looking to play some more Splatoon 2 should check it out.
Okay, all right. I'm looking forward to diving in and playing a lot more.
Ah, I see what you did there.
Something else I wanted to give my impressions on is not a new game release, but it is the Legend of Zelda Encyclopedia that was just released in bookstores and online just yesterday.
Oh, yeah, I saw a video of this. It looks pretty cool. What do you think?
Yeah, I did pick it up, and I have been reading through it. And, yeah, it's very, very impressive. It is jam-packed full of info. It's got lots of content. It has tons of extensive info on the lore and history and locations and towns and traditions and geography and weapons and items and enemies and races and wildlife and more.
Wow.
Of pretty much every game in the Zelda series. Also has a section, you know, covering all the games and the spin-offs and, you know, even a little bit covering merchandise and amiibo.
Your favorite.
Plus, there are lots of comparisons between the games showing how places or things have changed over time, and it reminded me of a lot of things I forgot or connections I hadn't noticed before.
That's cool.
So, yeah, there's lots of good stuff in there. One thing I was expecting it to have that does not have is comprehensive coverage of all the characters.
Hmm.
So, obviously, there are sections on Link and Zelda and Ganondorf, and, you know, some other characters like the goddesses, but I expected there was going to be like an alphabetical list, you know, like an encyclopedia has, covering like every major and minor character in the game, like from Impa to Ingo, and it doesn't.
Hmm.
In fact, I have not even seen one mention of Groose so far in the 35 pages I've read through.
That was actually on my mind.
So that would have been a really cool resource to have, so it's a shame it does not have that in an encyclopedia. But other than that, you know, it's very, very extensive. Lots of great stuff in there. It is, of course, the third book in the collection, the first two being Hyrule Historia and Art and Artifacts. And Art and Artifacts is pretty much just a pure art book, so there's really not much crossover between this book and that one.
Hmm.
If you have Hyrule Historia, though, it does cover a lot of the same ground, especially where the history and lore are concerned. But, you know, when it gets into the details like the races, locations, and items, and all those details, this is all new stuff that was not in Hyrule Historia. Plus, when that book came out, A Link Between Worlds and Triforce Heroes were not out yet, so that stuff is all new. I also have encountered a couple of little mistakes. I found one mistake, and I found another typo in there. So it's kind of a shame that that's in there, but other than that, I am not disappointed at all in this book. Oh, I should also point out, there is no Breath of the Wild content. There will be a book completely devoted to that game that is supposed to be out in November.
Cool. Now, online, I saw that the cover of this looks gold. Is that accurate?
Well, that is the special edition, and it looks like a Zelda NES cartridge, basically. I did not get that one. I got the regular edition. You know, it's kind of cool, but it's the third book in a series, and I just have the regular editions of the other one, so I kind of like having them all with the same exterior style. And while the other one is kind of cool, I kind of think that just the standard look is classier, so I end up going with that.
And you're a pretty classy guy.
Oh, you know me.
Cool.
Anyway, that does it for news and impressions this week. Let's try to squeeze in a little bit of a listener mail. This first letter comes from Sam Connor, who writes, "Now that Mega Man 11 is on the horizon, I'd like to know what Mega Man series you'd like to see a new entry in next. Personally, I'd be most excited for Mega Man X9 or Mega Man Legends 3.
What do you think, Chris?
Well, I'm sure, Pete, that you would have said Mega Man Soccer 2, but for me, I think I would agree and say Mega Man Legends 3. Obviously that was supposed to be a game. It's one that I actually got a chance to play, but it didn't actually come out. And I'm not sure that's the real game I would want to see come out, because in that game you didn't play as Mega Man. You play as another character called Barrett, and it felt more like a prologue to a new Mega Man Legends game than a real Mega Man Legends game. So while it was good, I would love to see that series make a comeback. I'd like to see all those dreams and promises of a Mega Man Legends 3 fulfilled, and I would love to see a real Mega Man Legends 3 released on Nintendo Switch.
You totally stole my Mega Man Soccer 2 joke.
I knew it.
Such easy fodder.
Yeah. Next letter comes from listener Brian Booth, who wrote, "I really enjoyed the compilations episode. This is a topic I could go on about forever, but I'll try to pare it down. First of all of your and Ethan's ideas were great. I'd love to have a full 16-bit Mickey Donald compilation with titles from the SNES and Genesis. As far as Konami goes, I'd love a TMNT compilation with the four NES titles, Turtles in Time, the Hyperstone Heist, and the Genesis or SNES TMNT Fighters to round things out. In addition to Konami and Capcom, there are probably enough quality Hudson Soft or Sunsoft games to make a good compilation. The two compilations I'd love to see the most are really Pipe Dreams, I think. As I've mentioned in a previous email, I'd love to see a Radiant Hero collection of Fire Emblem, Path of Radiance, and Radiant Dawn. With all of the FE hype right now, I feel like these two games would make a big splash on the Switch. I'd also really love to see a Professor Layton collection on the Switch. They could sell a collector's edition with some fab extras, since the Professor is so fashionable, like a scarf and some lapel pins. And of course, a couple of Layton and Luke amiibo. The game would be a great companion to Layton's eminent, one can hope, arrival in Smash Brothers."
I'd like to see a Mega Man Soccer compilation.
Yeah, I'll bet you would.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I love some of these ideas. I especially like the thought of some sort of Professor Layton compilation, and especially the idea of Layton and Luke amiibo. I think it'd be really hard to do it because so much of that series, was based around the dual screen nature of the DS right. And 3DS. But if they could figure that out, I think that would be excellent.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, all these combinations I would be interested in buying.
Fire Emblem, though, I have to say, I feel like they should probably cool off on Fire Emblem a little bit. The way it started to become like an annual series, I feel like maybe they were starting to overdo it. So while I would love to see a reissue of Path of Radiance and Radiant Dawn, I feel like maybe cooling their heels a little bit until after Three Houses comes out might be the best way to go. But yeah, I think eventually those totally need to be re-released.
Yeah, and I'll take in an Advance Wars compilation, please.
Oh yeah, definitely. That'd be great. I mean, really, there should be a new entry in that series, but if we're not going to get that, a compilation with all the previous styles would be excellent. Next letter comes from Joey T, who writes, I had a great time listening to your commentary while watching that horrible Super Mario Brothers movie, especially the last 40 minutes. If I had to pick my least favorite detail of that movie, it would be their depiction of the Mushroom Kingdom. It's fine if they wanted to make a movie about dinosaurs who desire to be human on our planet because they've turned theirs into a fungus garbage dump, just don't call it Super Mario Brothers. And I think I have an answer for why they use dinosaurs. Their research went as far as the first level in Super Mario World, Dinosaur Land. Think of what that movie could have been if the first level of Super Mario World was Eggplant Land or even Capybara Land. He makes a very good point.
He really does.
If only.
Well, I'm glad that some people listen to that our commentary. That's something.
Yeah, and that last 40 minutes was especially wild since I have pretty much no recollection of it personally.
Hoffman went off the deep end.
Joey continues, also, I love that Smash is an ultimate port. Smash 4 plays perfectly, and I've wanted all the characters together for so long. It'll be interesting to see them all in the updated mechanics, especially with the additions like the directional air dodge, being punished for dodging too much, and damage adjustment for player count. And obviously, the idea of new and unlockable levels, characters, and even Echo characters is very intriguing. I'm hoping for a Forest Kingdom level, and Paper Mario as a Mr. Game & Watch Echo character. I feel like we could have gotten some info on Bayonetta 3 at E3, No More Heroes, and especially Metroid Prime 4 because they debuted it last year and ended the Direct with the Ridley reveal. But hey, we got a Fire Emblem and a Mario Party reboot. That's why it's great being a Nintendo fan.
Aww.
Yeah, it's pretty much true. You know, if it's not one thing, it is another. You know, even if your favorite series doesn't get an announcement or a reveal, you know, there's probably going to be something else that we can all enjoy looking forward to.
Yeah, and the cool thing is, you know, those are waiting in the wings at some point, so.
They are indeed.
Cool to know.
Our next letter comes from listener Tyler Fail, who writes, I read your blog post about Mega Man 11 and have to say that I'm quite excited for it now. I was a bit wary of the transition to 3D graphics, but you put my fears to rest. You did comment on having an issue with needing to charge the Mega Buster at all times to defeat normal enemies quickly. But my favorite game in the series is Mega Man 5, which required just that, so I'm looking forward to it. Mega Man 9 and 10 weren't the same for me because they removed that feature.
Hmm. Did this person, like, time warp, listen to the podcast, and then just write this?
No, this is a blatant plug for christhehoff.tumblr.com. I wrote a little preview of Mega Man 11 after I got back from the show. But yes, I did mention pretty much the same things that I mentioned earlier in the podcast. But I did like his comparison to Mega Man 5. The use of the Mega Buster is a lot like that. So, if you did like constantly using charge shots like that, I think you will probably very, very much like Mega Man 11.
All I know is you are a Mega Buster.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. All right. I think this episode of the podcast has probably gone on long enough, so we should probably wrap things up here. And I don't mean the DK wrap.
Oh, boy.
However, before we go, I believe we do have time for one more thing. And, of course, that is a dramatic reading.
Bum, bum, bum!
This time, it comes from the pages of Nintendo Power Magazine, issue number 4. It is a preview of Robo Warrior. Here's a sci-fi adventure that is destined to be a hit. Long on excitement and rich with imagination, Robo Warrior unfolds the futuristic tale of Zed, Z-type Earth defense cyborg, sent by Earth to her colonized sister planet, Altiel. Zed's mission is to defeat the alien Xanthro Empire that has invaded Altiel. The citizens have gone underground, but not before hiding many weapons and secrets on the planet. Guide Zed through Altiel's 8 amazing regions, where you'll encounter dozens of Xantho invaders and the formidable Xantho lords who guard each region.
That's all you got?
That's it.
Wow. The Xantho lords.
Yep, Xantho lords, Xantho invaders. Reading this, I have actually, like, no idea what the game is about. I don't think I ever played it.
Xantho Lords would actually be a great band name.
It would be. You should probably start that up right away.
Yeah, I definitely never played this game. I'm watching video of it right now. It doesn't look bad, per se. It just doesn't look like it has anything unique about it.
Yeah, I don't know if I ever played it, but I certainly remember seeing the game on shelves, like, forever.
Oh, yeah.
It's got sort of this weird-looking robot on the front of the box, just very kind of goofy looking, I guess.
Isn't that funny? Like, it's funny that somehow, you know, even though, like, obviously I didn't know you as a child, I feel like, you know, most people just didn't buy this game. And how do...
Yeah, that's one of the funny things about it. You know, it says right there, it's destined to be a hit. And I feel like, no, it's more like destined to warm Toy Store shelves for, you know, most of the next 5 years.
Right. But it's just funny. Like, how, why did, like, no one want to buy this game? Was it the
box? I don't know. I guess they just overproduced it or something.
Was the box art a little too dystopian?
Could be. Could be.
Who knows?
Oh, well. All I can do is speculate.
At least it can live on as a dramatic reading.
Indeed. Anyway, that does it for this week. As always, you can find us at powerpros.podbean.com, and you can follow us at PowerProsPod on both Facebook and Twitter. You can follow me, The Hoff, on Twitter at ChrisTheHoff, and you can find Pete at BurlyRedYeti. You can email us at powerprospod@gmail.com, and of course, if you like the podcast, it would be great if you left us a rating on iTunes or told your friends about us. Thanks for listening, everybody. For myself, Pete Michaud,
D.K. Donkey Kong,
and the legendary swordsman, Ike,
let's end this.
We will see you next time.